What does David Ricardo teach us about Brexit? And are the right people listening? Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. In an era of globalisation and trade wars, David Ricardo's contribution to economic theory has never been more relevant. Peter Neary of the University of Oxford, he's also a CEPR fellow, thinks that understanding Ricardo's ideas can help us understand many of the causes and the consequences of Brexit. Peter, welcome to Vox Talks.
Hello, Tim.
We all know the name of David Ricardo, but most of us don't know much about him or his background. Who was he?
David Ricardo was the second founder of economics, and he was British, like the first. Adam Smith is probably better known, and maybe deservedly. Adam Smith started it all off in the 1770s. But David Ricardo, in 1817, produced the first analysis of economic theory, if you like, standing back. Rather than looking at the world, as Smith had done, he stood back and said, how does the world work?
And you argue that he made economics a more rigorous science.
You could argue he founded economic science. I guess what I'm particularly interested in, and maybe as your opening suggested we're going to talk about, is he pioneered the study of international trade.
Now, his lasting contribution to trade theory was the concept of comparative advantage, used to torture students ever since. But first of all, we need to find out what that's replacing or improving on. We have theories of mercantilism and absolute advantage, don't we? Can you explain a little bit about those?
Right, okay. So before Adam Smith, there was a body of thought which is hard to pin down in terms of what they really understood, but it's sometimes called mercantilism. And I guess the bottom line would be rather similar to, I'm afraid, policies that we're seeing implemented right now in the US and in other countries. So the idea is that it's a bad thing to import. It's a good thing to export. And the more you export, the better. And indeed, you should try and export more to each country relative to how much you import from them. That's just all very silly. But I'm afraid it has popular appeal.
Well, yes, you turn on the news now and you still hear people talking about this sort of thing. It's intuitive. Does it matter that it's wrong?
I think it does, because it's missing out on the fact that opening up to the world economy and thinking about the potential to import goods that are produced more efficiently, I'll come to that, relatively more efficiently abroad, that makes possible an enormous gain in living standards. And indeed, it underpins modern life. Think of your iPhone, your mobile phone, made in Shenzhen in China, from bits and pieces imported from 40 or more countries all around the world. None of this would be possible without trade.
Does it matter that a lot of people still believe in mercantilism? Because generally speaking, they're not trade economists. So how much influence do they really have?
I think in practice, what matters is who is taking the decisions and on what basis are they taking the decisions. I think there's an awareness on the part of most politicians that trade is beneficial on average, and I'll come back to that, can be harmful for individual groups, therefore is something to be managed, but the idea of withdrawing from it would be crazy, and the idea of restricting it in an arbitrary way, in the manner that I'm afraid we're seeing at the moment on the part of the US administration, is not a good idea.
So let's get to Ricardo. Paul Samuelson famously spoke of the thousands of important and intelligent men who've never been able to grasp his concept of comparative advantage. So, of course, now it's your job to explain it to thousands of important and intelligent Vox Talks listeners. What is it?
Indeed, Samuelson said that in an era when it was acceptable to refer only to men. But it's true, thousands of intelligent men and women have great difficulty with the concept. It's not intuitive. Let me give a homely example first. There's a classic example of a classical pianist. So she's a fantastic pianist. She's world class. Of course, she's very dexterous with her fingers, so she also is a very good typist. But she needs to do a lot of typing, say, for her bookings and her engagements and her correspondence and so on. So should she do her typing herself? The alternative for her is to hire a typist, hire a secretary, and this secretary will be not as good a typist as her, much worse than her as a classical pianist. That's a perfect example of comparative advantage. The pianist is better at both things, okay? Has an absolute advantage, both in playing the piano and typing letters. The typist is worse absolutely in both, but is relatively better at doing the typing. And it's efficient from the point of view of both of them to divide up the work.
So now apply that to international trade for me.
Replace classical pianist by Europe. Replace typist by China. And there you are. Europe is absolutely more efficient in just about everything than China. That may sound surprising. It's clear Europe is absolutely more efficient in producing the design of high-tech goods as opposed to the assembly of high-tech goods. But in fact, if you look at productivity of factors of production in general, comparing China and Europe, there's just no question that Europe is absolutely more efficient at doing everything. However, China is relatively more efficient at doing the stuff that doesn't require quite so much of skilled labor, rather more unskilled labor, doesn't require quite so much of the physical capital, rather more of labour in general relative to Europe.
Everyone's just finished their exams, so there's now hundreds of students thinking, I wish you'd explain that to me a month ago.
Well, thank you. I hope it's clearer. It's a very subtle concept. Mm. Another way of thinking about it is that Adam Smith put forward the idea of absolute advantage. That's not a stupid idea. It's good to import stuff from a country that is absolutely more efficient at producing than you are. However, absolute advantage is only part of the story. Absolute advantage looks at differences between countries. Comparative advantage is about differences in differences. The two countries are different, and within each country, there's a difference in how well they do different things.
So is that body of theory that began with Ricardo borne out when we look at the empirical data on how trade works?
One of the big triumphs of modern economics, not so well known outside economics, is its use of big data. Hmm. So in recent years, in fact only in the last 20 or so years, we've had an avalanche of data on exports by firms and so on. One great study that looked at comparative advantage by dividing the world up into small units, small fields, if you like, all on the computer. They managed to get data on the efficiency of these different tiny plots of land at producing different crops. And there's something which really fits the Ricardian model. Different pieces of land, some are at high altitude, some are in the tropics and so on. They have different comparative advantages in producing different crops. Guess what? When they looked at the production and trade patterns of these crops around the world, they fitted extraordinarily well the theory of comparative advantage.
I promised at the beginning that you would use Ricardo to give us an insight into Brexit. So, first of all, does it help to explain how Brexit happened? Because that seems to have surprised a lot of trade economists.
Comparative advantage is the single most important idea in international trade. It was not the only one. The second most important idea in international trade is that trade has distributional effects. Ricardo wrote about these as well.
Ah.
Not in the same rigorous theoretical way. He was both an academic, but also a member of parliament. He spoke in many debates, always on the liberal side on many issues. He voted against the death penalty and against slavery, but also, of course, in favor of free trade. He made clear something that we now understand very well, that trade is good on average for all countries that participate, but it's not good by any means for every individual in each country. In Ricardo's time, the bottom line was that for him, the two effects worked in his favour. Comparative advantage means that it's a good idea to have free trade for the economy as a whole. No argument. Mm. Second point, though, what about distribution? In Ricardo's time, the big question being debated was the corn laws, tariffs on imported corn. In fact, they weren't abolished until quite a while after Ricardo died. But in that controversy, he was on the side of abolishing them, fully aware that that would harm some people. Who would it harm? It would harm landowners. Mm. And as a liberal member of parliament, he didn't particularly like landowners. So he was clear that the efficiency effects coming from comparative advantage and the distributional effects between different groups that more trade would bring, they were both positive effects for him. There's a very simple lesson from that for today. Today, we can think that, yet again, the efficiency effects, more trade with other countries, is going to benefit countries as a whole. The evidence shows it has benefited. Britain, Europe, the US, they've all gained from trading, opening up trade, for example, with China. China itself has gained enormously from opening up trade. However, there have been distributional effects, and more evidence is accruing to show that those distributional effects have hit hardest groups typically working in low-skill industries, typically older, typically male, although there are exceptions. There are some industries with lots of female workers that have been badly hit, and people who increasingly feel estranged from the political system, quite properly, because they're not participating in the gains.
We are at the CEPR IRWIT conference at the moment, and it's very interesting to see when we talk about international trade at conferences now that These distributional effects are far more to the fore in the presentations that we're seeing than they would have been even 5 years ago.
I think that's a very fair point. I think in our theory and in our lectures to undergraduates, we would always have emphasized the distributional effects of trade, but possibly we took our eye off the ball a little bit. For example, the changes in the world economy in the last 20 years have been quite extraordinary. China entering the world economy, not just China, but Vietnam, Bangladesh, huge textile exporter, and to a considerable extent also India. Lots of trade barriers still in India, but relative to where it was 20, 30 years ago, it's much more open and much more engaged in trade. So all of these effects were dazzling in their complexity and the temptation to study them as movements towards a more efficient world economy. Perhaps we tended to emphasize that bit too much, and we didn't put enough emphasis on the distributional effects. That's changed, though, in the last 10 years. Lots of economists have started to look more carefully at these distributional effects.
So now let's move to the other side of Brexit. We assume that it's going to happen. Does Ricardo's legacy give the people who are working at the government's department for exiting the European Union, I assume they listen to Vox Talks, any policy recommendations for what they should be doing as we leave the EU and have to start thinking about forming new trading relationships?
Yes and no. The details are not something which you can expect to find set out in a textbook, but the general principles, definitely. By the way, Ricardo was quoted on both sides of the Brexit debate, those in favour of Brexit often arguing that it would be a good thing to move to unilateral free trade. Mm-hmm. I've already argued that that's actually not the whole story. It misses the point that moving to unilateral free trade would probably, for Britain, wipe out industry, even its proponents have admitted that, and hit very hard many groups who currently benefit from, let's face it, the protective effect of being within the European Union. But I mentioned two important ideas in trade. There's a third important idea, unknown to Ricardo, partly because he didn't have the data. It's only since data has become available, especially in the last 20 or 30 years, really only in the last 50, 60 years, that we've realized there's a third factor influencing trade, and that's the force of gravity. Gravity is an incredibly powerful factor in determining the level of trade. The bottom line is that if you have two countries, identical in all respects, but one is twice as far from Britain, Britain will, on average, tend to export half as much to the more distant country. And that turns out to be true over all countries. It's almost like a universal constant. Gravity isn't destiny. It's not guaranteed to be exactly one for one, double the distance, have the trade. But it's pretty close to that. And what we see is, if you look at British trade, for example, the major trading partners to which Britain exports, the amount that it exports relative to their GNP falls off steadily with distance. One interesting exception. There's been a bit of talk about Empire 2.0 as a post-Brexit solution to Britain's problems. But actually, if you look at the numbers, Empire 1.0 casts a very long shadow. Britain already trades more than it should, I say should in inverted commas, with faraway countries like Australia and New Zealand that happen to be former colonies. It trades much more with Hong Kong and Singapore relative to their GNP than it does with China. And guess what? Within the European Union, which are the three countries to which Britain exports more than it, quote, should in terms of gravity? The answer is the three former colonies, Ireland, Malta, and Cyprus. They're all above the gravity line. Ex-colonies, and this is a factor, it's not true just of British exports to former colonies, it's true of French exports to their former colonies and so on. The idea that you can somehow compensate for withdrawing from the benefits of trading with nearby countries in the European Union and replace that with new trade agreements with faraway countries, I'm afraid it ain't going to work.
So on Vox Talks, we often ask the people we're talking to be omnipotent policymaker for the day. But this time, I'm not going to ask you. I'm going to ask you to channel Ricardo. If he could plan trade policy afterwards, if he could influence our trade policy, what would he be saying?
I'm not sure what he would have said. I'm actually not an expert on his, I haven't read many of his speeches to Parliament, for example. But I think to summarise, he would say, first of all, yes, we want to move towards free trade in general, get the benefits of that. We already do that. I think he would definitely have been in favour of a multilateral approach to free trade, working through the WTO, but not necessarily using only WTO rules, because he would have recognized that today trade isn't just about tariffs, but it's also about standards, about non-tariff barriers, and so on. Britain currently enjoys extraordinarily free access to the other countries of the European Union, and that is reflected in the way in which supply chains, British car factories, are incredibly integrated. You know about the wings of the Airbus, made in North Wales, loaded into a gigantic Airbus, specially designed with an opening nose. They call it a beluga, because it's like a beluga whale. These giant wings are wheeled in and then flown down to Toulouse, where they're assembled. No barriers. No, they just come in and out. If they were being sent from North Wales to Stansted, there would be just a little bureaucracy. And I'm afraid, leaving the single market, forget Brussels red tape, there's going to be so much red tape around that an awful lot of firms will have to reorient their business, and a lot of workers will find they have to either retrain or they'll be out of a job.
One corrective we always have to put in at this point is to say that when we talk about trade economics, we always talk about the numbers, we talk about the business. Trade is not just about money, is it?
Of course not. It's related, first of all, to the exchange of goods, to the exchange of ideas. It is tied into the question of migration. And of course, in the Brexit debate leading up to the referendum, migration played a very important role. Interestingly, there's been rather less discussion of that since. Indeed, we're seeing some reverse migration. In a way, you could argue, and I think Ricardo would certainly have said this, trade is part of a liberal internationalist view of how the world should work. It's not about one country gaining at the expense of others. It's about all countries together benefiting. A non-zero-sum game, as we like to say. And I think that's the positive view of trade we should take. And whether Brexit goes ahead or not, I guess the thrust of my argument is that leaving the single market, leaving the customs union, would not be wise in the light of what we know about international trade. If Britain does leave those institutions, it should try very hard to maintain close links with nearby partners in order to continue benefiting from trade.
So from what you've said there, I think I've got a clue to what your answer to my next question is going to be. And it's the final question, but it's also the one I asked at the beginning. Are the right people listening to what Ricardo could teach us and also listening to the economists who built on his legacy?
I am afraid the answer is probably no these days. We've heard criticism of experts. Public is tired of experts. I think it would be a pity if when people want advice on which economic policies to follow, they also disregarded experts. I like to think of economics as a science, but a science rather like medicine. Not like physics, where you can calculate the trajectory of a rocket or a planet with extraordinary accuracy. We can't do that. Doctors can't answer the question, will I be alive, will I be healthy, 12 months from now or 5 years from now. They can tell you, give up smoking. It's a good idea. But we all know there are 90-year-old smokers. Not that many of them relative to 90-year-old non-smokers. Similarly, it's conceivable that Brexit might work out well for trade, but the science, current knowledge, suggests that it's the harder the Brexit, the more serious and damaging the consequences for Britain's trade and ultimately for its living standards will be.
Peter, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You can grab a copy of Peter's presentation that did on this topic. It's on the internet. If you search for Neary and Ricardo, you'll find it. And check out the CEPR website for some of Peter's discussion papers on trade. There is a terrific one on the impact of red tape. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. Every Friday, we bring you the best and most useful research in economics. So subscribe on your podcast platform or check out a decade of Vox Talks at www.voxeu.org/vox-talks.